All the news from Microsoft Build 2017. Your audio drivers might be logging your keystrokes. A new self-driving smart home is coming this September. What happens when even the biggest brick-and-mortar retailers can't compete against Amazon and an internet-connected spout for your bottle of Jose Cuervo? All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1766, recorded Thursday, May 11th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you what happened in technology today and why it matters.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Breaking news right before the show. We heard the revelatory information about Mr. Rogers, the entire run of the series, 800 and some odd episodes, streaming in a marathon format on Twitch beginning May 15th at 12 p.m. Pacific. Apparently, it's a fundraiser as well. I guess that's why you do this. So anyone who wants to sit through all 800 and some odd episodes and then report to us and tell us how much better of a person you are at the end of that, let us know. TNT at twit.tv.
They should have a robot watch it and see what happens.
See what it learns.
Yeah.
Feed artificial intelligence 800 some odd episodes of Mr. Rogers and make it become like the kindest robot ever in the world.
It's like the opposite of Tay, the Microsoft bot that they put on Twitter. Like watching a marathon of Mr. Rogers is the exact opposite of Twitter.
That's the robot you want.
Yeah.
The robot we need is a Mr. Rogers robot.
Right. But what is the robot we deserve, Jason?
That's an open question. Yes. Yes, I need more of that.
That fade from you to Mr. Rogers was weird. You really look a lot alike.
Try it again. See? it's like we're twins.
It is a little bit. All right, should we get to the tech news?
Yes.
Okay. Build 2017 continues today. I had a chance to co-host Windows Weekly live from the Build Developers Conference with Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott. If you want to deep dive into what's going on there, I suggest downloading that show at twit.tv/ww. Here are the main takeaways, if you don't have a lot of time. Microsoft announced Windows 10 Fall Creators Update, which will connect across all your devices. And it will look better, too, with a new framework called Fluent Design. Microsoft's new cloud clipboard will let you paste something you're working on your Windows 10 PC to almost any device you move to, including your iPhone or, Jason, your Android phone. Apple is also bringing iTunes to the Windows Store. Mary Jo and Paul spoke to a few special guests, including Chris Prattley, who's in charge of the team that launched Story Remix. That's a kind of Apple's Clips competitor designed to make it easier to turn your home videos into art without all that time messing with editing and such. So, yeah, it's a good second day.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of exciting things happening.
A little bit more substantial from an outside looking in perspective today versus yesterday. Yesterday was very heavy on the cloud, and no doubt, you know, for developers, which is kind of what this is all about, really good information for them. Some of these announcements are the kind of announcements that people who aren't necessarily in that realm can understand and look forward to. Although I don't know, are there a lot of people looking forward to iTunes and Windows Store? Is this like a thing that people actually want?
I mean, I don't know if it's... Mary Jo and Paul seemed sort of excited about it. I mean, it's definitely something to say.
Yeah.
Especially as they're pushing into the education markets and, you know, the college markets. Like, that's something like, hey, we've got iTunes, college kids. They pick up where you left off. That was one of the...
That's cool.
Cool features that you could, you know, continuity, I think is what they called it. Either they used to call it that on Windows, or that's what they call it on Apple. Just the idea that you can go from one device to another device. And, you know, the fact that you don't need a Windows phone, because they've admitted that not many people have them to do that.
Yeah.
Timeline is a feature where you can see everything that you're working on. So if you're working on a bunch of stuff on your Windows 10 and then you get on the bus with your iPhone, you can see everything that you're working on. And Story Remix also looks cool. I mean, it just looks like, you know, it really uses some AI to be able to make a good story. Chris Pratley was quick to say, like, you know, we're not just doing it for you and taking all the creativity out of it. But some people like feel anxious about like where to start when they're creating a movie. And so they just kind of gets you started a little bit.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Cloud Clipboard, by the way, I was always a big fan of SwiftKey. Did you ever use that keyboard? I know that they have it for iOS as well, which Microsoft had acquired that last year. I guess Cloud Clipboard is kind of part of, well, they utilize part of SwiftKey in order to pull that off. And it's kind of an explanation, or it's kind of an example, a demonstration of the pick up where you left off feature, to kind of link those experiences between desktop and user. Having some sort of a cloud clipboard is actually really handy. There are apps that you can do and like plugins that you can, you know, install into your browser or whatever, but having that on the system level, I have to imagine, would be pretty nice. So pretty cool stuff. Andy Rubin, the father of Android, is hard at work with his Playground Accelerator, and one of its startups, Lighthouse, is releasing an interactive assistant, because everybody's doing that nowadays, that can help protect the home with the help of artificial intelligence, because everybody's doing that nowadays as well. The device has an RGB camera with a 3D sensor, along with deep learning to help it tell the difference between intruder threats and, let's say, a dog drinking water from a bowl. Not only that, the Lighthouse can analyze patterns in the home to recognize when someone is expected to be home, whether they've arrived yet, and even that it's time to walk that dog that just got its drink of water. Pre-orders begin today, starting at $399 for both the device and a year of the intelligence AI service. So you're not paying, you have to get it with the service, because that's kind of crucial to how this assistant actually works. There's a lot of like the deep learning and AI happening on the background to dynamically, you know, determine things like who that person is in your home. Who is that person in my home?
When we were doing iOS Today a couple of weeks ago, someone was cooking bagels in Leo's oven. You know, he has the June smart oven.
Someone?
Well, it just was like someone's cooking bagels. And it turned out to probably be Lisa, like, but hours before, like the alert was, you know, a couple hours delayed. but, you know, so that's the problem. Therein lies one of the problems. You know, I have the smart lock and it notifies me when the house is unlocked or locked. And it's often delayed. So it's, you know, you can't necessarily 100% depend on these things.
Yeah.
And what they're talking about is like using some of the self-driving car technology in here. So it's like a self-driving house, I guess. You know, a self-driving smart house. What I read was, you know, they were saying, well, you know, your house isn't smart. Your smart home isn't smart. You have to tell it to turn the lights on or off. Maybe you get to use an app to do that, or your voice. You have to tell it to lock the door and unlock the door, you know, when you're coming. I want to be able to tell it those things. Like, I don't want it to get smart enough that it knows when I'm coming home and it's going to unlock the door or when I'm not. I mean, I get it. Like, I don't want it to, you know, set off the alarm if my dog is just going in front of it. I want it to be that smart, but I don't necessarily want it to have control of, you know, the locks and the heat more than me. I still want it. I guess I still want it to be a little dumb.
Yeah, I kind of compare that to on Android, especially. There are launchers that you can get that dynamically surface apps that you're more likely to use when you're, say, at work versus home, or in the evening versus the morning. You know, they're really smart about determining your usage patterns and making kind of assumptions based on that. And the idea being, well, it makes your life easier, because instead of having to launch these things, we just give them to you because we know that's probably what you're going to want. But most of the time, like, yeah, that intention needs to be there, because even when it's being smart, it ends up being inconvenient, because when it doesn't pair up properly, that's not a good thing. And then you convert that into your smart home with your locks automatically unlocking or whatever, and that could be potentially a dangerous situation. But there's some really cool stuff going on here, like the idea of, you know, I said it kind of in jest, but you know, someone being identified in your home. They don't have facial recognition built in at this point. It's more object recognition and pattern recognition early on, but they expect facial recognition to be built in when it finally releases. But the idea would be that, you know, it has a camera and it's kind of monitoring the room. It sees somebody that it doesn't recognize. You'll get an alert and it'll say, somebody's in your kitchen. Who is this? And if you know who it is, oh, that's my daughter, you tell the app that. And then going forward, that person, your daughter, does not kind of sound the alarm bells, you know, that you get notified for. If it's not somebody, it's smart enough to determine that somebody that it instantly recognizes. And, you know, you can act upon that as a result. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. If you're watching the video, that before it was, you know, there was a alert where it said, has anyone walked the dog today?
Right.
And that must be a dog very different than mine, because if no one has walked our dog, he will let us know. And I don't really know any dogs who will also not let you know. That's not what you need smart technology for.
So it'll be $3.99 for the year of service, $5.99 for 5 years of service with it. And yeah, we'll see how effective it actually is. It purports to do a lot, you know, thanks to the utilization of artificial intelligence. We'll see how much it gets right. Mm-hmm.
Google has announced the acquisition of Owlchemy Labs. That's the VR studio that makes the popular game Job Simulator and the new Rick and Morty virtual reality game that we've talked about on the show. Owlchemy, I'm not just pronouncing alchemy wrong, it's OWL, like an owl. Owlchemy. They will join Google's, thank you for the sound effects.
You're welcome.
They will join Google's Daydream division, but they say that they will still create games across many different platforms. Now, Google hasn't been in the VR game as long as some, but their in-house creations like Tiltbrush and Google Earth VR are very popular. As for Owlchemy, Job Simulator's success was due in large part to the fact that it was available at launch on many different platforms. So when the excitement was still fresh with all of these headsets, Job Simulator was there. So sources say that the deal is similar to the one that Google has with Skillman and Hackett. That's the VR studio that did Tiltbrush. So it's like, you know, they still sort of act a little bit independently of Google. Job Simulator made $3 million in sales. And Owlchemy has been around longer than many of these studios. It's 2010. They've also been more successful.
You played Job Simulator. I haven't played that.
You haven't?
No, I haven't played that. Was it fun?
I enjoyed it. And yeah, it was, I mean, Tiltbrush and Job Simulator were the most fun that I had. Because I'm not really a gamer. Like, I don't, you know, so I do like throwing things around in the office, like pretending that I'm throwing things around.
Right.
Pretending that I'm throwing things around in the office.
Every once in a while you throw things around and it hurts when it hits.
That's why, yeah. So the more Job Simulator I play, the fewer times I throw my coffee cup at your head.
Oh, okay. Then we need more Job Simulator in life. No, not really. Yeah, I mean, Google owns, I mean, with this, a pretty impressive kind of short list of very cool games, right? And experiences, like you said, Tiltbrush, these two games. Too bad none of those three things actually work on its own VR platform, Daydream. So I don't know. This news makes me maybe a little bit more optimistic that we'll see some interesting announcements, something around VR coming from Google. Last year was the first year that they unveiled their Daydream effort. So we're only a year in. So you expect something. But, you know, I hope that we see something that maybe moves it, moves the needle a little bit more as far as what their efforts are. Maybe even some, you know, some form of AR intertwined with the VR. We've heard some rumors about a standalone VR headset. Maybe their standalone VR headset will be able to run some of these. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this, if it all ties into that stuff. Researchers have discovered that certain HP laptops are keylogging unbeknownst to users thanks to an audio device driver developed by Conexant. The driver has a feature to respond to certain key presses, but in doing so, it's keeping a log of keystrokes stored on the C drive, including IDs, passwords, contacts, really anything that you type out at any time. Owners of HP EliteBooks, ProBooks, ZBooks, and Elites can delete the MicTray.exe or the MicTray64.exe files in the short term, doing so will probably disable some of the function key features of that executable. But you would do that until HP or Conexant can respond with a fix. Right now they have nothing, but it's basically just keeping this log file filed off. They're probably doing it for diagnostics. There's no indication that this is actually being sent back to Conexant. So it's not a matter of like capturing this information and sending it back to them. But because it's being stored on the C drive, if you also have like some sort of an auto backup, whatever feature or a backup drive that's keeping a history, all of the keystrokes that you enter in at all times is being added to that log file and then backed up to your backup. So it's like you have a full running history of everything that you typed. If someone can figure out how to get that file, that's not a very good scenario for you.
I know. So what do you feel more terrified about? Like the Lighthouse camera in your house possibly like recording you, or your audio drivers recording all your keystrokes? Then if you take in that step that everyone tells you to do, just back up, it's worse.
Yeah, then it's worse. I don't know what's worse. Fear everything? Yeah. Technology? Fear technology?
Yeah.
We're just, fear uncertainty and doubt?
It might be time to give up.
Yeah. I'm not going to give up yet. I feel like there is room in this world for an audio driver that does not log all of your keystrokes.
Okay, good.
I think that can exist.
But these are high-end laptops. These are new laptops that are running Windows 10 and Windows 7. This is not the case of like, oh, you're running XP on your 5-year-old laptop. These are new machines. And they didn't do it on purpose.
No,
right?
I don't think so.
That's what it looks like. The guy who discovered it looks like it was just laziness.
Yeah, it was laziness. And, oh, hey, what do you know? There's everything that you ever type ever. In order for someone to get access to that, obviously, they're going to need physical access to your machine. Or network access would work, too, depending on how you have kind of your sharing options, mm-hmm. Set up in the settings. But it could potentially be pretty bad, right? Like we kind of tend to think of entering our passwords into something and moving on, and that's not kept anywhere because it's a password, it's secret. But this is a keylogger, essentially. It's a log file, but it's a log file that's acting as a keylogger that's capturing everything you type because it's waiting for those like key commands to fire off some of the features of the audio driver. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of weird that an audio driver would do this. I'm sure they're going to issue a fix or something. But if you have one of these machines, definitely know that this exists.
And can you go in and delete it manually?
Well, you can delete those files, the executable files that I told you, that will limit some of the features of the audio driver as far as like key commands that fire off certain features. It'll probably stop that from happening, but then you won't be logging all of your keystrokes, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, that is...
weird.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It really is. Among all the tech companies reporting earnings over the last week, some decidedly not tech companies are also reporting earnings. Macy's, Nordstrom's, JCPenney, Sears, and other well-known retail giants releasing their quarterly reports, and it appears that Amazon is eating all of their lunch. Retail sales are actually up, but most of those sales are online. Macy's stock has fallen more than it has since 2008. A spokesperson for the company says they're not only focusing on stabilizing their brick and mortar business, but also investing heavily in their digital business, which clearly they need to do. Analysts say the companies need to get better at using data to figure out what people want to buy in order to compete with Amazon. So actually all stocks close lower today because of these bad retail numbers, mostly Macy's. It's so bad, Forbes is calling it Retail Mageddon.
Oh no, it's a Mageddon.
Macy's is closing 100 more stores. And this is the worst part. They're going to stop having the people help you put on shoes.
Really?
Yeah, really.
I'm going to have to put my own shoes on?
Yes, you're going to have to put on your own shoes.
There, yeah.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
I remember that as a kid. Like, you go to the shoe store and there's the person that, puts your shoes on and sees if they fit and everything.
I remember that.
People don't really like that anymore. They want to do it on their own. That's what Macy's is saying.
I just don't know how necessary it is. Like, I see a shoe there. I like it. Does it fit me? Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's about all I needed help with was me.
How do you know if it's you?
I don't know. Maybe they know better than I. What's interesting here is that I found another article that's kind of related to this on Business Insider that's all about kind of the war of bots that's happening between all of these retail sites, including Amazon. Walmart, for example, and I would say that Walmart's done a decent job going from brick and mortar to also digital. They have a pretty decent digital offering when you go to their site and use their products, and they price competitively online, especially compared to Amazon. Well, all of this is happening thanks to bots and systems that they have, right? Like Walmart can monitor Amazon's site thanks to the bots that they've employed to understand when Amazon does a sudden price drop and then comparatively match. And Walmart's really good at that. Once they know, they will often drop their price to the same price. And then it's kind of like, okay, well, who are you going to buy from? There's no price advantage. We're both selling it for that price for whatever limited time. But Amazon has also done a very great job of understanding that these bots are coming in and analyzing, and so doing countermeasures to prevent that from happening. And it turns out Amazon is just such a, like, has so much money and understands the internet and digital, because that's its birth. You know, its birth was the internet, that it is able to be super flexible with its inventory. It can reprice things multiple times throughout the day, something that brick and mortar stores don't have as much of an ability and flexibility to do to compete. And it can employ really great bots to kind of counter analyze its competition and keep other bots out. So.
And
yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of advantages.
And Walmart's skills at this is they're relatively new, because they bought Jet.
Mm-hmm.
And Jet was invented by the guy who started diapers.com, which was sold to Amazon, and then he kind of got pushed out. So, you know, he understands how Amazon works, and they're sort of, you know, battling it out. But it is, I think, that you don't know about how much, it's not just the price, but like the styles and what things people want to buy. And, you know, retail has always used all this data to find out, like, people in Wisconsin are this size and they buy these things versus the people in California are this size and they buy these things. But now it's like Amazon doesn't have to deal with any of those logistics of where people are. It's just like everyone is, you know, they have everything. And
it's have all types of everything. That's the Amazon model.
Except for someone who will help you put on your shoes and buy the right shoe.
Well, you know, they're sending people to our house to deliver our groceries onto our counter of our kitchen. Maybe they can send over a shoe sizer person, whatever that job is called.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Shoe salesperson.
There, that's better. Thank you, Megan.
I mean, I think they called them shoe salesmen because they were mostly men, I guess.
Right. But now shoe salespeople, delivery Amazon.
Now they call them
folks.
Nothing.
Yeah, that's true. That's actually more accurate. Quick reminder that you can comment on anything we discuss by emailing tnt@twit.tv. We'll get to feedback a little bit later. And of course, subscribe to Tech News Today by going to our show page. It's always found at twit.tv/TNT. Coming up, we'll chat with Eric Geller from Politico about Trump's signing of the cyber executive order today. That happened a few hours ago. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper. They're the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system, and it's designed for entrepreneurs, possibly like you. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires no hardware purchase. With their iOS and Android app, callers actually reach you wherever you are on the mobile phone that you already have in your pocket. It's like it takes that phone and it gives it another task. It does double duty at that point. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand from your phone. When you make a call, your client is going to see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. You simply select a toll-free or local number, record a custom greeting. You can add multiple extensions for your business. Toll-free numbers, as you know, awesome for marketing, makes your business sound more professional. You can set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. Get voicemails emailed to you if you prefer to get them that way as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number using Grasshopper. Join the over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 per month, and you have a 30-day money-back guarantee. So turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. And we thank Grasshopper for their support. All right. Just a few hours ago, U.S. President Donald Trump signed a new executive order to improve the government's cybersecurity practices and protect its infrastructure from threats. Joining us to talk about the order is Eric Geller, cybersecurity reporter for Politico. How's it going, Eric?
Great. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to have you back. So first, give us some insight on what exactly this new executive order aims to achieve.
Well, it really kicks off a number of reviews more than setting any particular policies in motion. It essentially says, look, it's the policy of the U.S. government to have secure federal networks, to have secure critical infrastructure, you know, hospitals, power plants, that kind of thing. And here are a bunch of reports that different cabinet officials have to carry out. It doesn't, aside from a handful of things like telling federal agencies that they have to use a specific cybersecurity framework from a technical standards agency, it doesn't actually lay out a lot of requirements. It's basically just, hey, we need to assess the situation. We need to see what's out there. And then we're going to start taking in some recommendations from the Secretary of Homeland Security, the Director of the FBI, the Director of National Intelligence, and other senior officials.
So President Trump almost signed a similar order only a few days into his presidency back in January. Why didn't that happen then? What happened then?
Yeah, well, it's very unclear what had happened during the transition. After he won, he got together former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and a couple of other people who were sort of tangentially interested in cybersecurity, and they basically set to work looking at what they could do in this area. Once he took office, in that kind of 11-day span between when he was inaugurated and when he was first supposed to sign the order, basically a lot of career staffers at the Office of Management and Budget, DHS, the White House, started looking at what they had done and basically said, look, you need to let us weigh in. You need to bring us into the process. And that's what slowed the process down. He was supposed to sign it on actually the last day of January, but it turned out they hadn't really briefed all the agencies. They hadn't gotten enough input. And so they basically postponed that. And, you know, look, it's been, what, more than three months since then. We've been trying to figure out when it was going to happen. And it just kind of came as a surprise.
I know during the end of the Obama administration, there was a lot of talk about like how old a lot of the systems were, and they switched over from Blackberries to iPhones. And is there anything in this document about how they're going to deal with all of the aging cybersecurity infrastructure?
Not at all. This is, you know, when I said earlier, it sets out a lot of reports. That's what these reports are going to get into. They're going to explore where are areas where we can have cost savings, where are areas where we can do, where we can move to the cloud, where we can move to shared services, where we can try to bring in some private sector wisdom and understanding. You know, maybe some corporations out there understand how to, you know, run network better than this particular agency does. And so that is what you're going to see a lot of in the next few months. I should say that this White House senior advisor, Jared Kushner, is the director of the American Technology Council and also the head of a new office called the Office of American Innovation. The idea behind those two entities is Jared and Chris Liddell, who is another tech innovation guy at the White House, they're going to go out and talk to a bunch of corporate executives and basically pick their brains and say, what are some things the private sector is doing better than the government, and how can we apply that to federal networks and federal IT? I think that is the tip of the spear in terms of what Trump is doing on cybersecurity. Is he really wants to look at what the private sector knows that the government doesn't.
Hmm. Now, you know, you mentioned kind of Obama's former President Obama's efforts in this area, but you also kind of mentioned that this is kind of broad strokes. It's not very specific. I know that in the past there have been, you know, some moves by President Trump to really kind of get in there and upend the norm, you know, and kind of really radically change things. But we're not seeing that here, right? Like, this isn't really taking things in a different direction from where former President Obama's cybersecurity efforts were lying at that point. Is this just adding to that?
That's correct. You know, one of the really interesting things about reporting on cybersecurity is that it is one of the very few areas where there isn't a lot of acrimony and partisan finger pointing. There is certainly a lot of criticisms across the industry, but it isn't really political. It's more technical and that kind of thing. This is not an area where Trump came in thinking that he had to repudiate what the Obama administration had done. People were concerned that he was going to be a little bit more military heavy, but this executive order dispels those concerns, at least for now. We're actually just about to put up a story where we talked to, among other people, essentially the top three cyber folks in the Obama administration, the cyber coordinator at the White House, the chief information officer, and the chief information security officer. And all of them said, this looks pretty good. This looks like a validation of what we were doing. And I think that gets to, you know, again, this is not an area where there's a lot of partisan tension. This is an area that is very technical, that is very detail oriented. And for the most part, you are seeing bipartisan consensus on a lot of the steps here.
Yeah, that's my big question, too, because as you say, that cybersecurity and also privacy is seen as very nonpartisan. And so do you think that makes things move more quickly?
For what is very detail-oriented and for the most
Sorry, can you say that again?
Did we just fire off your Husk or your Amazon Echo?
I think you did. I think you did. Sorry
did
about
I
that.
Say
that one more time. I think something happened there.
I try to think of what word I said that sounded like that.
Sorry about that.
No, don't worry about it.
Like you said, it seems to me like cybersecurity and privacy are very nonpartisan. Do you think that that means that things will move faster or slower because there's no one pushing really hard for their team?
Well, it's interesting. I think slower. And I also think, you know, you raised the point that there may not be as much fierce advocacy. I think another question here is this is a very technical endeavor. And so this is a slog. This is going to be a very bureaucratic process. The Office of Management and Budget is going to get with every agency and say, where are some areas where we can find cost savings? Where are some areas where we can move to shared services? These aren't conversations that lend themselves to kind of moving very quickly. I mean, you could say that about a lot of things as the healthcare reform effort has showed, but this is in particular an area, especially because of the security concerns. This is an area where they are going to move very slowly. I wouldn't expect to see a major policy change in the next couple of months. Now, who knows? We've certainly seen a lot of surprises from this administration, but this is, I think, one place where they're going to stay the course.
Probably pretty safe to say, but how much of an influence do you think the things that we see in this executive order were influenced by kind of the allegations of election hacking or by the Russian government and the other things that we continue to hear about day after day as far as kind of technological, insecurities, let's say.
Well, look, the president certainly recognizes that this is a topic of conversation. I don't necessarily know that he would have paid attention to it to the degree he did during the campaign if it weren't being discussed in another context. Maybe he would have. I don't know. But the White House is very strongly denying that there is any connection. Tom Bossert, the Homeland Security Advisor, when he was briefing reporters today, said this is not a Russia prompted executive order. This is a U.S. prompted executive order. This is about the vulnerabilities that exist in our networks and would exist even if this other conversation weren't out there. So, you know, look, the people who have been preparing this executive order in recent months are career staffers at the National Security Council, OMB. These are not people who are looking around and saying, wow, look at the Russian hacking story. We really need to put something together to save face. These are people who have been dealing with these challenges for years, and now they have an opportunity to move forward again with it.
Awesome. Eric Geller from Politico.com. Really appreciate you taking time tonight to talk with us about this. Thank you so much.
Sure thing.
Where can people follow you? Is it at Eric Geller on Twitter?
Yep. And if you go to Politico.com, anytime there's a cyber story, there's probably something from me up there.
Yep. I see him all the time. Big fan of your work. Thank you again, Eric. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Now I know how to set off your Amazon Echo as well. So
sorry.
I'll try
that,
to use that only for good.
Yes.
Take
all right,
care.
See you later. Have a good night.
Thanks.
Jerry from Galesburg, Illinois writes, I listen to your show every morning while I shower. Thank you, Jerry. You two are great. I'm a young 73-year-old who has jumped from the Galaxy S3 to an S8. That is a big jump. It's a great fun device by itself, but even with its highest resolution setting, the VR suffers. I can't afford to buy a new phone in a year or two with 4K. Question, what are the chances of someone coming out with a VR-only 4K device that would go in the VR that I have? So I guess what he's asking is, anybody going to come up with something that's shaped like a phone, not a phone, cheaper than a phone, that will go into the Gear VR that he probably got free with his S8? What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the number one, the challenge is that the Samsung Gear VR only works with Samsung's devices. So if you're hoping that someone would come out with that device, an improved 4K VR device, it would have to be Samsung. And so maybe, I mean, I guess your best bet is if the next generation of Samsung Galaxy devices actually has a 4K display. Right now it's UHD, which is 2220 by 1080. 4K resolution is 3840 by 2160, almost twice as much resolution there. And that would improve, I think, if I understand what Jerry is asking here, when he says the VR suffers, I'm guessing that's that refers to just like the resolution experience. When you put that phone into Gear VR, if you've never done VR, like mobile VR, or really most VR platforms are like this, that when you put it on, I think in our minds, for the first time, we expect it to be as sharp as like the monitor that we look at on the screen in front of us. And it's not like that. It's taking that resolution and blowing it up. So you end up seeing pixelation, you end up seeing kind of the screen door effect, and 4K no doubt will improve that. So I think the best bet is just the next generation, or the two years from now, Samsung decides, all right, it's time to move to a 4K display. Very well could happen in the specs race. I could totally see Samsung possibly doing that, but a VR only device, that probably not so much. I would be very surprised if Samsung did that, which is what you'd need. You'd need Samsung specifically to do that, to work with the Gear VR. So there you go. Hopefully that answers your question. TNT's fan of the day is Joe DeGunzik on Twitter, who sent us this shot of his home theater setup, saying he's getting ready to shoot May's Q&A video for Smarter Home Life and catching up on TNT. You may recognize Joe if you see his videos. He was back on episode 1720. He was a guest with us a few months back talking about creating a smart home on a budget. So this is totally his thing. He actually just posted a video showing off Amazon's call feature with another friend of the show, Alice Sheridan. So nice work, Joe. Thanks for sending that in. Shows how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag How I Watch TNT, and we'll find it.
Imagine the next great hacker movie where our innocent hero falls prey to a cyber criminal who manages to hack the internet-connected pour spout that our hero uses for his bottle of vodka. That's right. I said internet-connected pour spout for liquor bottles. That's a thing, but it's not necessarily a thing for your home yet. TechCrunch reports the makers of a device called Nectar are hoping that bar owners will use the internet-connected spout and stopper to automate inventory and reduce shrinkage. In other words, they don't want the bartender handing out free drinks.
Shrinkage,
that's
air
what they
quotes.
Mean by shrinkage. Shrinkage of the inventory.
Yep.
An ultrasound sensor captures the bottle shape and liquid depth to compute the amount of alcohol that's been consumed from a given bottle. I also think, personally, this would be a great device to have at home if you have teenagers. Just
yeah.
saying.
There you go. You could really monitor that. You'd be like, oh, wait a minute. Why did it just empty? And why is it suddenly full again? That's probably water.
Right.
They refilled it with water. Yeah. That's the trick.
Right. Except for with the vodka that you put in the freezer. That's why you keep the vodka in the freezer, of course, because vodka doesn't freeze.
Oh, yeah. I see. That's true.
I'm just going to say that.
We're spoiling all of the secrets here.
Well, I don't know. It was apparently something my parents knew, and I found out the hard way. But
that's awesome.
Of course, if you had the lighthouse camera, you wouldn't need to worry with these internet connected devices. You could just spy on your children at all times.
Yeah, man, we are creating a surveillance state in our homes, I'm telling you.
But CR1 points out it's like an Amazon Dash for all your liquor needs. That's true. Like if your liquor bottle gets a little bit low, then it will just Bloop. Reorder it.
Here, have another bottle of Hendrick's gin.
Amazon doesn't sell booze though, do they? I don't know.
I don't believe so.
I feel like if they sold it, I probably would have bought it by now. But
if Amazon wasn't going nuts, with profit already,
yeah.
Once they figure out the whole booze thing, game over.
But it would be great if it did order booze and if it would reorder it. But then if you got to like too fast, if you were draining the bottle too fast, and it would start like sending you like books and things and just like other chocolates
or notifications on your phone. Yeah. Slow down, dude.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want that?
Right.
Before
exactly.
you actually take a drink?
Yeah.
Pre-order now. They're not actually charging for the sensors. They're charging a monthly fee that costs $2.99 per month or more for larger bars. So obviously it's very geared for bars at the moment, or restaurants with a bar or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At first when I saw that it was another IoT device, let's make this smart. Let's make that smart. In this case, it's a liquor pour spout. At first, I thought it was kind of in that weird category of like, that's not necessary. But I could totally see this. This would actually be super beneficial for people running bars and restaurants to have a really nice, tight control, a tight look at I don't know how much they're wasting potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Kara, you want
to bring in Groot Chat.
You had to make sure that Groot Chat made it. Today, Burke is out. So we have Patrick Delahanty in here helping out. And he brought along his pet Groot. Right. And so we're really happy to have Groot Chat along for the ride in place of Burke.
We also asked Groot Chat what he thought of this internet connected spout. And that's how he answered.
He said, I am Groot.
Mm-hmm. Which I totally agree.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Groot.
And I looked on Amazon. They have a beer and spirits section, and this is what's there. 100% beef jerky and single infusion mash tun.
Wait, that's literally all that's there?
That's under beer and spirits on a grocery and gourmet food.
Beer and spirits, two things. Okay.
I don't even know what this mash tun is.
There must be more things. I'm not convinced it's just two things.
Mm-hmm. Wait, when you worked at bars, like, did you... Yeah. Were you a heavy pourer or a light pourer?
I was never. I had a very short stint as a bartender. I really went more into the food service. But many of my friends were heavy pourers. And I was very happy about that. They were very happy. They would not have been happy that this existed back then. Mm-hmm. Neither would I. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can also find us on our subreddit. We are at technewstoday.reddit.com. Join us, add stories, upvote stories, downvote stories, leave comments. Just join us there and subscribe to the show so you are the first one. Even if you watch live, we still would love it if you subscribe because you might miss a day. Go to twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director. You heard her on the just a few moments ago, Kara Cole. Thanks for having you along, Kara. Also, thanks to Baby Groot. You know, for helping out here in the studio and moving tables around and stuff. Groot might not look like a lot, but Groot is a brute. And Kevin, thank you for editing the show. And thanks to you, yes, you, for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.
Groot is a brute.